Shoot the Defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you've played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. It is my top five matches. I'm your host, Stel, and I've got a special co-host this evening. It's her Shoot the Defence debut. It's Bobby Hadgraft. How you doing, Bobby? You all right?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, all good. All good, can't complain. The weather's nice. People are driving like idiots and not sticking to social distancing. But apart from that, everything's all right, I guess.
Yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare, isn't it, at the moment? Not very clear what the rules are, but... you know, here I am, I'm doing this, I'm, you know, really excited to get involved.
Well, it's great to have you on. And we have a very special guest this evening. Some may call him a cult hero. I call him a legend of Millwall Football Club. It's Mark Beard. Mark, welcome to the show, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, all good, thank you. You?
Yeah, all good, mate. No complaints again. But, good. Yeah, I guess you've had a busy few seasons, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, well... I've been doing Brighton Youth Team now for the last 4 years, and I mean, as a professional as well, 20 years. So this is probably the first time in my career where it's been a bit surreal, really. I've had 8 weeks in lockdown, and I'm coaching players at the minute via FaceTime and doing sessions every day, which has been really weird. And I've actually been out on the pitch of them and doing everything over the phone. So it's a bit of a challenging time.
Well, this is something that obviously we're not used to, and you guys especially. So how are you planning your sessions? It must be really, really difficult not having that physical contact there.
Well, the first week when it happened, to be perfectly honest, I struggled. I didn't know what we was going to do. I just spoke to my S&C coach who arranged the sessions. The boys were doing gym programs. And over that weekend, the boys were asking, we're missing football. Is there anything we could do? So what I started doing, designing sessions that the players would do individually with a ball, or if we did longer distance stuff, they'd have to go to a park. So so I'd design a session, show them it, and then what I'd have to do is FaceTime them. So I'd do groups of eight, so right. The eight players live with me on FaceTime. I'd do the demo, my daughter would be holding a phone, I'd do the demo, and then they'd have to set their phones up so I could watch them actually doing the video, and I'd time them, and I'd give a whistle or a shout to tell them to stop, then they come back in, I'd show them the next exercise. So we've been doing that for 8 weeks now, and I've been on a few courses, again, FA courses, and I don't think any other club has done what we've done, like with the football. So it's worked really well, and the boys have really enjoyed it. But then last week we got told our season's going to be not continue, so it's like 6-7 weeks of hard work, but then they got let down at the end. But the most important thing is that they've stayed safe and well, and it looks like the Premier League's going to restart again. So we just have to keep fit for that, really, in case the gaffer needs to call us in at any point.
Oh, understandable. And from a tactical perspective, what has this done for your sessions? Have you had to modify it in that respect?
Well, it's actually been hard. So what we've done, because they can only do individual stuff, and I've sort of done sessions where, like, position related as well, so like for forwards they'll be doing different types of exercises, defenders will be doing different type of exercises with a ball and without, but we've done a lot of unit analysis, so our analysis team would do not just videos of ourselves, but obviously we've been watching World Cup games, and they right. can study the game and they could talk for the analysis themselves. So we've kept them busy throughout. They've done gym programs, their home gym programs, football sessions 4 times a week, and analysis, so psych sessions, one-to-ones with our psych over the phone. So we have kept them busy just to keep them mentally like mental well-being as well, keeping them active, their brain active. And otherwise, if we're not back until what they're saying at the minute, maybe mid-July, it could be like 3-4 months of literally no football, no contact with them.
That's crazy. And I'll take it, is it Callum that's still the academy S&C coach?
Yeah, Callum's with my under 18s, Callum Brazil, yeah.
Yeah, because I got in contact with him a few months ago, and obviously he was quite busy, as you all were back then. Yeah, I can imagine what he must be going through right now, because I've spoken to many SNC coaches and they're pretty much in the same predicament. It's going through Zoom, it's keeping in contact with the players, making sure that they're all right, and obviously the mental side of this must be affecting them a lot.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, to be fair, the S&C staff, they've had to do probably more work than everyone else because, as I say, the football coaches, we've had to sort of take a back seat until we actually got to grips with what we're doing. But they've been brilliant. And I know it's the same with the first team. They've all been working extra hard to keep the boys, first team, ticking over and safe at the same time.
Mm. And Bobby, how is this affecting you? Because obviously all the unis are closed and whatnot. Aren't you at the Class of 92 uni at the moment?
Yeah, so it's been quite a nightmare for them because obviously we're the first year of students ever and it was kind of smooth sailing up until the lockdown, but they actually really have done really well using the online facilities of like Microsoft Teams. We've had a few Zoom calls, so it's quite similar to the training. And I think, as Mark noted, it's very important to kind of keep in touch with students' mental health because, as you know, there is quite an emphasis on keeping students' kind of mental health and looking after it. And, you know, the services offered by the university have been excellent. We've had student wellbeing online, especially because it is the mental health week this week. They've had kind of activities running throughout. Yeah, so it's been quite useful. No complaints.
Well, as long as everyone is singing from the same hymn sheet and everyone's all safe, that's the main thing, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. All right, well, let's talk about your top five matches, Mark. And I think we'll kick off at Old Trafford. Now, to be fair, and people who aren't aware of this match won't know that you guys, Millwall, almost ended the Class of 92 dream before it even began.
Well, obviously, back then, it wasn't a lot of social media or nothing, but obviously, we'd all heard of they called them the Fergie Babes, and they said that it's going to be the best youth team since Matt Busby's lot. So, we knew about them, and when we got the draw and we found out he was playing Man United, it was like, for me, my dad was a Cockney Red, he's a massive Man United fan. So for me, it's like a dream come true. Plus, I was a captain of the youth team as well. So when we drew him, it was like, it was an amazing sight. So it's quite funny, actually. The day before, we drove up, we stayed in a hotel, did it all right. And Ben Thatcher went on to have a great career in the Premier League and played for Man City and Tottenham and a few other teams. He decided as a team we'd all get skinheads. So what we did, we one by one all had our hair cut, and at the time I got a mop of curly hair, so I said I only want a grade four. So I went grade four, happy with it, went to dinner and all the boys are skinheads, there's a laugh. Then we decided, asked the youth team coach, the assistant manager, the physio, we done all them, they did it, and then we even got the coach driving and done his hair. And then Ben Fletcher, about 10 o'clock at night, rang me and said, you're captain of the team, come on, you've got to have shorter than that, go for a two. I went, okay then. So I went back downstairs to his room. Silly me, I weren't looking in the mirror, and he's gone everyone's looked. He's done, he's gone me a great note. Oh my god, I look like someone who was ill, and no one could believe it. So I'd literally a grade zero all over. So when the day of the game came, I was like, literally, I couldn't believe it. And like, my mum and dad didn't even know I was playing for the first 20 minutes, so they couldn't see me out there. But it's funny because he actually made Ryan Giggs' book. He said later on, like, it's one of the funniest things he's ever seen in football. So there's 11 of us all lining up in a tunnel, like, all screaming and shouting, motivating each other. And you look across, you've got Gary Neville, Beckham, Scull, Butt, and they're just looking at us thinking, oh my God, what are we playing against here? So it was a great game. It was something like 17,000 there at Old Trafford. And they actually went 1-0 up through Ben Thornley. He scored an absolute wonder goal. And then you're thinking, oh no, there's going to be a lot more goals here. But we kept it a 1-0 up to half-time. And then in the second half, we was absolutely brilliant. And Mark Kennedy scored two goals. Mark Kennedy scored one and Jermaine Wright scored one. And again, Mark Kennedy went on to have a great career. But no one could believe it. It was a big shock. But unfortunately, even though we won the first leg at Old Trafford, we lost 2-0 in the second leg at home. Nicky Butt scored a win in the 90th minute, like to take for them to win the game 3-0 in aggregate. So, but it's a great experience to win at Old Trafford, and one as a Man United fan as a kid is to go and win 2-1 and be a captain as well. It was an amazing experience.
I can understand, mate. And, you know, as you said, you went to Old Trafford, you got the victory. It's not as if you guys went there and you let the occasion get to you. So why do you think it went tits up in the second leg, if I can use that term?
The biggest factor was it was a very tight game again, very similar to the first game, but we had Mark Kennedy suspended.
And he
was our key centre-forward. He broke Teddy Sheringham's record that year as a centre-forward. He scored something like 48 goals. And he's one of them. He gets a chance, he scores. And at 0-0, I always remember it because I actually put him through. It's another lad who come in for Mark called Neville Gordon. He's 1v1 with a keeper. And if he had scored that, it would have been 3-1 up. And I remember it was something like 74 minutes. And he's missed the 1-1 anyway. And the keeper's made a save. From that, they've gone up the other end. And they've gone 1-0 up. So from then, you think, now there's tide's turn. So it's gone from us going 3-1 up, probably get to the final against Leeds, to then going and scoring, and now us like holding on trying to get to extra time. But extra time, they come, pulled, as I say, Nicky Butt scored from a dive and header, literally last kick of the game, which was it's a nightmare, but still great spirit. I think there's 15,000, literally a full house, and Man United even brought 2,000-3,000 as well. So it's an unbelievable experience again against, listen, who, the kids who went on to best players of the moment, like Scholes and Beckham and Nicky Butt and Gary Neville, you know, some great stars in the team.
Bobby, you got any questions?
I just wanted to know, because as a fan, I'd never visited Old Trafford. As a child, so I'm basically a Hull City fan, but when I was younger, you always have kind of a second team, and mine was Man United. So I went to Old Trafford for the first time last September, and I was taken aback, and that was as a fan. So I was just wondering what it felt like as a young player to go to the Theatre of Dreams.
Yeah, it's amazing. And at the time, it was just something starting there, you know, because Ferguson had taken over a few years, and I think they just won the FA Cup the year before, and he just started to build his own team. And Giggs has just broke into the first team, so you could sense something special has happened there. But to actually go out there and play, and even though there was only 17,000, it felt like there was 50 or 60 just because of the roar and the way. I don't know how the stadium does it, but when there is a roar, it just echoes all around, and it's a great place to go and play.
Brilliant stuff.
Great stuff. Mark, when you look at that United team, obviously they wanted to achieve great things. The following season, I think they lost to Leeds United in the FA Youth Cup final, and that was over two legs. I think Jamie Forrest had the match of his life, to be fair. Not a lot of those Leeds players went on to achieve the great things that obviously the United players did. When you look at your squad at the time, obviously you mentioned Mark Kennedy, who we know ended up at Liverpool. He had a good career. I think it was at Wolves at one point as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Republic of Ireland.
There you go. There you go. So when you look at that squad, again, looking back on it, all hindsight and whatnot, why do you think you guys didn't make that next step up, so to speak?
I think we did, in terms of, there was Jermaine Wright who went on and had international career as well. We probably had five or six who went on to be good pros. Mm-hmm. Difference between United and everyone else, he kept the squad together. I don't know if it's a financial thing.
Right.
So if we would have kept, Jermaine Wright got released, he got 1 year pro, got released after that. So what they did, probably the Championship and League One teams at the time, is if you didn't make it in the first year as a pro, they'll probably release you that next year. What United did, if you remember, Beckham didn't make his debut straight away. He went on loan to Preston.
That's right.
He come back, played like one of them League Cup games, and didn't make his like full debut. So I think he's about 19. So I made my debut for Beckham and Scholes and all them, and I was the same year group. But he kept them together to the 2-3 years. And that year when he played them all, I think they were second or third year pros. The difference is, as at Millwall, if you didn't make it within the first year, it's only probably me, Ben Thatcher, Mark Kennedy, Danny Chapman made his debut, like Jeff Pitcher went to Watford, Jermaine Wright went to Ipswich and had a good career. So we did have really good players, but I just think that's the difference between having a better budget than not, you know, not keeping hold of the kids for a little bit longer.
That was before Pafitis turned up, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was Reg Burr, our chairman. And we had Mick McCarthy as our manager.
Ah, yes. Okay, brilliant, wonderful. Okay, next game. Let's go with a 2-2 draw away at Bristol City. You got on the score sheet.
Yeah.
13th of November, 1993, mate. That's like, 6 days before my birthday. All right. Listen, that's a very good Millwall team. You had Alex Ray there. I remember Alex Ray, very tenacious central midfielder. Clive Allen, Pat Van Den Hal, fantastic left back. Kenny Cunningham, who I think was quite young back then. You mentioned Ben Thatcher, Casey Keller, Jamie Morley was a fantastic player at that level. And as I said before, you got your first goal for the club. But, you know, Bristol City, very difficult place to go. Ashton Gate, you had Wayne Allison up front, Brian Tinian, fantastic central midfielder he was, and David Martin at the back. So tell us about this game.
Yeah, it's a weird game, actually. It was my first goal, and I think I played about probably my sixth or seventh appearance. So went to Bristol, a real good travelling support again, like a big rivalry. I don't know why, between me and Bristol City, they're miles apart. But so we went there. I remember, again, my brother went with my best mate, and they were sitting in a crowd, and it absolutely poured down all game. We was 2-0 down at half-time, come in, and even though it was 2-0 down, I still felt I was having quite a good game. And then Mick McCarthy rattled into a few. And I think the turning point was, you mentioned him actually, Pat Van Den Hal. He got absolutely smashed in the tackle by Brian Tinian, I think. So I went over to Pat to say, you're right. And he was just like flat out on the floor, like he's like he was dead. And then Brian Tinian come over and said, get up, your tart, or something like that. And with it, I've never seen anyone switch like it. He's like, you know, like The Undertaker and wrestling. Like,
he sit up.
And his eyes, he's grabbed Tinian around the throat. And I can't probably sound it what he said.
Say what you want, mate, it's fine.
Yeah, he just grabbed around and was just like, oh, and kill you. So with that, like, everything changed then, because obviously, like, all us lot run around, and it just gives that bit between the teeth. So next thing, I think I set up the goal as well for John Goodman. He scored, and then, like, in the 78th minute, I've got the equaliser. I think I picked the ball up in the halfway line, run with it, went wide, gone in the box, and it's just sort of like deflected back to me, and I shot and scored, and it was a real good point, especially being 2-0 down as well. So to come back and draw 2-2 is a really good result. And then I think the funny thing is, when I went to score, I ran into the way fans, and that, I was looking for my brother, and he's actually had the players' comp ticket, so he's sat in the Bristol City end. And I see him as I was running back to the halfway line. He was getting escorted out because I scored, and he was jumping up and down, and he got slung out because all the Bristol City fans wanted to kill him. So he didn't watch the last 10 minutes.
Well, of course, that's an enormous deal. But obviously, as a defender, there's not really the same expectation, because every player, well, especially when you sign a new striker, you're just eager for them to get that first goal. But as a defender, what was the reception from fans like?
It's good. Listen, I'm a Millwall fan as well. I brought up round there, so the fans always took to me, especially being a young kid coming for the youth team, homegrown player. So when I score, it's always a special moment. And I don't score many, like you say, as a defender. And as a right back, I think it's only because I sort of started the attack that I just carried on my run, sort of got a bit excited, ended up in a box, and it just bounced to me in the box on my shot. So but the fans were brilliant always to me, and just like a special memory scoring for your hometown team.
Yeah, especially when you salvage a point. It's quite heroic, isn't it?
Yeah, and I remember that was my first taste of doing the media as well. I come out of the changing room, and I always remember it, like, I can't remember who was at the time, the head of Millwall Media said, come and all the press want to speak to us. The next day I was in the News of the World, the Sunday Mirror, I was in all the papers, and so that was my first taste to talk to the media as well, so that was quite an experience.
Great stuff. Mark, you mentioned the Youth Academy, and, you know, you bursting onto the scene as a youngster, the fans kind of appreciated you guys more for that. When you look at the other club in Claret and Blue, and they boast about winning the World Cup in 66 because of their youth academy and all the players that were in that team, is there added pressure for Millwall to produce quality youngsters because of the whole bragging rights, or is it because of a financial thing, you guys need to keep producing players?
Listen, I'm in youth now as well, so I understand the importance of bringing the youth through, and I think fans appreciate it more, and it's always nice, because if you bring through a good youth team player, it saves the club a lot of money. So no matter what level, no matter what league you're in, if you're bringing through young kids, it's a great achievement for the club. So the good thing about that Millwall youth team that probably didn't mention earlier is that we all supported the club. What was good with our youth team manager, he said we'd go to every single home game, we was going to away games, so you get to know how the fans feel, you get to know all the songs, you become one of them. So when you step onto that pitch, you're literally running through brick walls, like, for your teammates around you, but for the fans and for the club. So that's why I think Man United was so successful for so many years, because they had that as well. But Millwall's a big club in terms of bringing through the youngsters. We've had loads of good players over the years, so it was a privilege to play for them.
Yeah, no one likes us, we don't care. You know what I'm saying?
That's it, mate. That's it.
Yeah, siege mentality, and I guess that's what gets teams over the line, isn't it?
Yeah, the perhaps maybe you go to the Den on when they're on fire, the fans, 15,000, 16,000 screaming. It's like a 12th man, as they say. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Intimidating. Yeah, can you imagine, mate? All right, next game. This one must be a bit special for you. The FA Cup victory at Highbury, a 2-0 win over an Arsenal team that I believe went on to win the Cup Winners' Cup that season, if I'm not mistaken. You were 20 years old. Tell us about this one, because this was, as I said, it was a quality Arsenal team. It had Dixon, Keown, I know Adams came on, Winterburn, Ray Parlour, my mate David Hilliard. Ian Wright was fully rattled this game, wasn't he?
Yeah, Wright was like a man possessed. He didn't like Mill fans anyway, because I think a couple of years earlier we played him in the League Cup. I remember being in the crowd. Someone chucked a 50 pence piece and hit him on the head. So he went mental, going mad all game. Went to the papers the next day. So the next time they played them in the cup again, I think a few years before, they had inflatable 50 p's. So he just hates me. So in this game, he was like a man possessed. But for us as a team, it's unbelievable. We drew 0-0 at the Den. So this was the replay. I actually hadn't been in the team for 4 or 5 games. And then on the Saturday before this game, I played against Sheffield United. I won man of match and scored in that game as well, so that's why I started this game. And I think I'm a fullback as well, so for this game I played right wing, so I was a bit further up the pitch. So Obviously we made a really good start. Arsenal were a bit shaky, and I got the goal in the 11th minute, and it was a bit edgy after that because we didn't get the second one probably to the 94th minute. But and I had another really good chance in about 60th minute to score a second goal, but it was on my left foot, and anyone who knows my left foot was my strongest. I sort of just dragged it past the post, but it was probably an easier chance than the first one. But yeah, mate, it was an unbelievable game and great feeling to score as well against a top team like that.
Yeah, and I guess it must have been quite rowdy. I know you guys were obviously the away team, but I've seen footage of that game, and yeah, Millwall fans are, yeah, they're a bit naughty when it comes to going away from home, isn't it?
I think we had 6,000 in Clock End, I think it's called, in the away end, and I've got the picture because I score at the Highbury end, at the main end.
Clock End, yeah, that's right.
So I score there, and there's about 5 or 6 different spills, and in the last one where I'm off celebrating, all you can see is like little bursts of Millwall fans jumping up, and they always, like, a lot of them still say to me now, like, "Ah, you got me sun out. I've got ejected. I've got kicked in the away end because of it." Millwall fans were everywhere that game, so it was brilliant.
One more question for me before I let Bobby take the stage. What was it like playing alongside Alex Ray? Because I know that him and Ian Wright had a little bit of to and fro in that game. They were nose to nose at one point. He must have been such an inspirational figure at the club.
Yeah, Alex was a great kid. He's like typical Scottish terrier, get stuck in. But he was a great ball player, scored so many good goals as well for me, important goals. Ian Wright just had the ump, really. And what happened was, on the final whistle, it was Andy Roberts, and Roberts went through in quite late. The ref blew the final whistle, but Ian Wright wanted to carry on fighting, so really Alex Race has grabbed him and started. Then it went on to the tunnel then, and it even went on, this is no word of lie, 45 minutes later we all went into the players lounge. Alex Race with his wife having a talk, having a beer. Ian Wright's come in again wanting to fight the world and fight Alex Ray in front of his missus. He's got slung out by security, so he was still angry like an hour after the game finished.
Fully rattled.
Proper rattled, yeah.
Bobby, sorry.
So was it difficult going into that game, knowing that Arsenal's season was sort of disintegrating? Because obviously they would have been disappointed just having the replay after the 0-0 draw. Was that more pressure for you and your squad?
Not necessarily. I think there's a lot of pressure off us after that. Because the 0-0 game, I think it was live on Sky, the first game as well. And it was 0-0, obviously we've got the replay, but for us as a Championship team at the time, to go to a Premier League team, a big team like Arsenal, and it was like formidable at home. It's like hardly ever anyone beats them there, and the pitch is beautiful, so you always know you're going to go to Arsenal and have a great game with a great atmosphere. I think it's quite that game as well. I think it's Tony Adams' first game back after his addiction, whatever he went into the clinic for. So that's the reason he was on the bench. It was his first game back, so there was a lot of publicity about that at the time as well. So there's a lot of eyes on Tony Adams as well. So there's probably a lot more pressure on Arsenal than there was on us. So we could just, sometimes that's a better thing, just go out, play your game and go enjoy it.
So you didn't personally feel that you were approaching the game as the underdog, even though that's how everyone else would have seen it?
No, I was buzzing, especially after scoring on Saturday against Sheffield United, man, in man of match. For me personally, a 20-year-old going to play at Highbury, just it's what dreams are made of. So just go out there, a load of confidence, and do your best. That's what we all you could do.
Probably the best way to go about it, really. And out of interest, was that your favourite career goal, or was there another one that stood out?
No, that's the one. Like, as I say, Millwall fans still talk about it now. I still live off that goal. And I didn't score many, so. I can't get better than that. And against David Seaman as well, who's like the England legend.
Brilliant, I'm not surprised.
wonderful. Alright, next game. Stamford Bridge, you get a draw against Chelsea, goes to penalties and you beat them. But this wasn't just any Chelsea. Now, we're obviously used to seeing, you know, big spending Chelsea, Abramovich there and all these other names that we've seen in the past. But this wasn't a bad Chelsea team either. I know they didn't have the massive names like your Zolas, etc. But they had Mark Steen, Dennis Wise, Craig Burley, a certain Frank Sinclair that represented Jamaica at the World Cup. Dimitri Karim was a fantastic goalkeeper. And they got to the FA Cup final the season before that. So, as I said, this team was no pushover whatsoever. But you went to Stamford Bridge, got a draw and took it to penalties and beat them.
Again, exactly the same as Arsenal game. Played first game at the Den, drew 0-0. Again, very cagey game, full house. A lot of trouble inside the ground, outside the ground. So it's like real atmosphere. Teams hate each other. The fans hate each other. And so the first game was pretty boring. Second game was unbelievable. Probably, I know the Arsenal game was great and we won, but this, in terms of atmosphere and the intimidation factor from the fans, and I've just never played in a game like it. And Millwall have never played Chelsea again since, so it's like it's still for me like unbelievable experience. So to go there with that type of atmosphere, they actually went 1-0 up through Steen, and again, like just looking at it, thinking, oh, how are we going to get back into this? But we did equalise with 10 minutes to go, took it to extra time. Again, had some good chances in extra time and went to penalties. But the funny thing is, when it got to penalties, we'd never practised them or nothing, so no one didn't really know who was going to take them. So obviously Alex Ray, Andy Roberts, then Keith Stevens stepped up. And I don't know if you know Keith Stevens, Millwall legend, captain, went on to manage him. He wasn't the best passer of the ball shooter, so when he stepped, we're actually, he's never going to score. And he did, he just smashed it top corner. So, but as the penalties are going in, they weren't missing, we weren't missing. All of a sudden, we've looked round at each other. It's me, Ben Thatcher, who else is there? Tony Whitter had taken his boots off. He was no way taking one. Casey Keller and there's one other, I can't remember who it was. Might have been Ian Dawes or something. So we're all standing there. Dawes said, I ain't taking a penalty. And Thatcher said, I am not taking it next. And then Tony Whitter, like, just had to look, he had no boots on. So I would have been next. And all of a sudden, mate, I just felt physically sick. My legs were shaking. I'm thinking, if John Spencer scores his penalty, we haven't designated he's going to take it, and it's sudden death, I'm going to have to take it because no one else is. And I just couldn't even watch the penalty. So I was facing the Millwall fans, looking the other way, and all I see, obviously Spencer stepped up, Casey Keller's made a great save, and all the Millwall fans jumping on down, so I just sprinted towards the Millwall fans that end. All the players sprinted to Casey Keller like most normal players would do. So I'm in now, because it's pitch invasion, I'm jumping up and down with all the Millwall fans, and all the boys who went to celebrate with Casey, Chelsea fans are running on the other end, and they all got a good eye in. Thatcher was fighting, Casey Keller was getting punched, Dave Mitchell got one in the head, so I did the right thing and got out of trouble.
Well, this is Stamford Bridge that they renovated it, didn't they? Because before that, massive gap, you could park cars between the goal and the stand. Yeah, yeah. So they knocked it all down and rebuilt it. And so fans are very close to the pitch. I can understand that. But tell me something. We haven't spoken about this player. And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Kerry Dixon at the club while you were there?
Yeah, it was later that season. He joined probably about March time, but I think he was cut tied, so he wasn't involved in any of these cup games.
So did he have anything to say about that? Because he's against his former club, and Kerry Dixon, obviously, a Chelsea legend.
Yeah, he didn't. He wasn't there then. I think he signed like in the March, and his game was in the February, so he missed it. Kestrel was a legend. Yeah, he came in. He's only there 2 months, and I loved him.
Can you imagine? And what about Clive Allen? What was he like having around the club?
Different class. What a pro, top man. Real as a youngster. Obviously, I've watched him growing up, you know what I mean? So it's one of them where when you play with players you watch, it's a great feeling. but a good player, right forward. I don't think he scored many goals for us at Millwall. He's coming towards the end of his career, but he could just tell he's a great, great, great guy.
Yep. I don't think he will play American football ever again, though, to be fair.
Nah.
<I'm going> Bobby, got any questions?
Well, obviously there's quite a fierce and historically violent rivalry between Chelsea and Millwall. Does that affect the players, and did it get into your head before the game?
Nah, as I say, I'm a Mill fan, so for me, I was just like a Mill fan on the pitch. I'm running about, throwing myself in tackles. Dennis Wise betting me on the pitch, £10 here, £10 there. I'm going to get to this ball before you at a throw, trying to put you off. And I made sure I never let Dennis Wise do that. And he did actually give me the money later on. So as the fan, it's just like, you just want, like I said, for the Arsenal game, you just get out there, you run, you chase, you just want to do the best for your team. And we did it, you know.
Would you kind of relate it to kind of playing for your country? Because with such kind of an inner passion for the club, you would have been more fired up and ready to kind of defeat them.
Yeah, definitely. I think, when it's your own team, I can't describe the feeling. I'm one of them who will always, anyone who knows me, I've always given 100%. So, like, even when I later signed for Sheffield United and played for Southfield, whoever I play for, I'd always give 100%. But when it's your own team, I can't describe the feeling. It's just that something more special, and you know your mum and dad are there, and your best mates are in a crowd, and it's like friends who I'll be in the stand with and still go drinking with now when I go to Millwall, they're all there watching and supporting. It's a different feeling, and I think you're right, probably the closest thing to representing in your country, like playing for your own team.
I suppose players like that are few and far between nowadays. Do you think that's something we're missing in modern football, just players that actually support the club that they're playing for?
I've got I've got 23 players on my youth team now, and sometimes you say to them, what team do you support? And I don't really support a team. I just can't understand that as a footballer, you know. You should have a team, you want to watch as many teams you want, like Barcelona and that, but you should have your one team who you support and care about. But it depends what family you brought up in as well, you know what I mean. I was lucky that my dad, as I say, used to take Man United as a kid when I signed for Millwall at 12. Going to the games home and away, I just become a fan like literally overnight, and it stuck with me for the rest of my life.
I totally agree, and I wish we saw more of that, because I really like the idea that you followed them home and away and you kind of got a feel for what it's like to be stood in the stands, and you can, you know, when you score that goal, you know how the fans feel at that moment. I really like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's hard to do it now, especially with Brighton being in the Premier League, but if ever I got to like Millwall or something like that, I would make the youth teams do that. I would make them go home and away, but it's hard trying to get a Premier League ticket for myself, let alone for 18, 20 boys, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can totally relate. Maybe not as a Hull City fan, it's quite easy to get a ticket, but when I've tried to get tickets for Old Trafford down the road living in Manchester, it's been a nightmare, so totally agree.
Brilliant. Well, Mark, you mentioned your time at Sheffield United. Got a couple of questions based on that. That Sheffield United squad, looking back at it now, you had the likes of Adrian Heath, who was fantastic. David White, Man City legend. Nathan Blake, the late, great Gary Ablett. What can you tell us about these players, mate? I mean, they were Gordon Cowans.
Listen, it was an unbelievable team. When I signed, first of all, it's Dave Bassett. So I sort of had a bit of a nightmare. He signed me in September and he got sacked by October, so like I literally played week in week out of him. He got the sack, and then Howard Kendall come in. Now when Howard Kendall come in, he literally like overhauled the team. He got new players in, but the players he was bringing in, it was like wow. You got Brian Dean, Fjortoft, all big and national. Ian Rush come in, Dean Saunders, Don Hutchison, Gareth Taylor, Michael Vonk, Vasba Borkis, Triadellas. We got players, and then obviously all the old Everton players he had as well, like you just mentioned, Gordon Cowans, Adrian Heath. We had an unbelievable team, and it took me probably 3-4 months to get back into the team. I don't think he fancied me at first, but again, like, I just worked my way back in, didn't moan, just kept on training every day, worked hard. And by the March of that season, I started getting in, and the next season, I played an awful lot. I played probably 25 games and had a real good season. We got to the playoff final, lost to Crystal Palace, which was gutting. Got to an FA Cup semi-final, lost to Newcastle, Old Trafford. So it was just a great experience, training day in, day out. And in the 3 years I had, I think I made like 56 appearances, but the experience I learnt from the training with these top players was like second to none.
Did you ever imagine Delas becoming a European winner?
We signed two Greeks. We signed Michael Borkis and Triadellas, right? And they both never learnt a word of English in 3 years they were there. And all you speak to Try, like, I used to play right back, if he said, "Oh, Try, I can't do this," he used to just grunt. I don't even think he could speak. You think, "Oh my god, is he real? He's just a machine." But yeah, he went on to win the Euro. I couldn't believe it. No, you can't believe it.
It's crazy, because I was talking to my dad about the European Championships in 2004, and he says, you know, that Greek team, they'll never be that good again. I says, they weren't particularly great back then. You know, I'm not going to lie to him. Look, Yanagopoulos and Katsourandis, they're two of my friends, so they won't mind me saying that. That Greek national team wasn't exceptional, but they had that team spirit there. And, you know, for them to win, it was a miracle. But, you know, I remember Delas, I remember Bobokis when they came to England. They weren't anything great. And even when Delas went to Italy, he was in Roma's reserves, effectively.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, he weren't great. First, Bobokis was excellent.
Mm.
Very good player, right back. But that Greece team, not similar, but you know, like when Leicester won the league, similar to that, the spirit got them through. They're very hard to beat, and they hit teams on the counter. So they're just effective what they did. But like I said, they'll never be like that again.
Mm. And one more thing, before I really bore Bobby here. Howard Kendall. Now, this might help you, Bobby, because I know that they've done a film or released a book about him, about his life.
Yeah.
The greatest Everton manager ever. They won titles, they won European trophies. What was he like in the hot seat? I know Harry Bassett was something completely different, but this fella, Howard Kendall, must have been elite, no?
He's the best. He's the best. And you know what? He had a good coach with him as well, Cliff Busby. But you know, it wasn't nothing. He's very simple. I imagine he's pretty much like Brian Clough, for the fact that stories I've heard about him, he simplified everything. All he did was got good characters, players who knew what they was doing, players who would work hard for each other, and all had a bit of quality, you know what I mean? But there was nothing like mind blowing in training. There's no tactical genius like you look at Pep and Klopp and things like that now. People say, "Oh, what did he do to get the best out of him?" And I just think he's just an unbelievable manager. And how he did that, he got you to run through brick walls for him by not motivating. He just he'd take us out every week. He got us in trouble with the wife, by the way, because he loved the social. So we'd train really hard Monday, train Tuesday, and then we'll pop up for a Chinese on a Tuesday afternoon, and then you wouldn't get home till Wednesday morning. So I think there's a few divorces going on at the time. But what he did, he just got you playing for him in a way that I've never been at a team like it since. And it's no, everyone says, like, you speak to anyone still now, like your Don Hutchison's and your Peter Reid's and anyone who played for him, they try to mirror their style on him. It's hard to put into words, mate. He's just like one of a kind.
That's a legend.
Yeah.
Right, moving on. Kidderminster 2, Stevenage 3. The first match at the new Wembley, the first final, shall I say, at the new
first
Wembley.
Cup final, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. You guys came from 2-2, I believe, to win the FA Trophy, which is now called, I don't know, what is it called? The Checker Trade Trophy? What is it? I don't even know.
No, it's still the FA Trophy.
It's the FA Trophy, yeah? So what's the Checker Trade Trophy then?
Something... FA Trophy is the non-league version of the FA Cup.
Ah, yes. My mistake.
So it goes all the way down to, I don't know what you call it, Step 6, is it? Like Ryman League sort of thing?
Right.
All the teams from that level up to the conference.
Okay. So
I think I remember North Ferriby winning it a few years ago.
That was the Vars.
Was that the Vars?
Yeah, so they're the county leagues and down. So
okay.
Yeah, it's like anyone who's in the conference, like they're the teams who normally win it. So it's a big cup, and the thing about this game was it was the first game at the new Wembley. So when we qualified for the final, Wembley still hadn't been built, like officially, and they was hoping to get it done for the Chelsea Man United Cup final.
Okay.
So they only had one test. They had the England under 21 test game first. They played someone, and it's only like 15,000. So when this happened, the only tier that weren't open was the top tier. So they made tickets free for kids, I think, and £10 for adults. Okay. So we got there's like 57,000, and we just couldn't believe it. So went into the game, having beaten Kidderminster twice that year already, I'm probably confident, and before you knew it, it was 2-0 down and absolutely getting smashed. weren't playing well at all. It was like, oh no, I can't believe this. And at half time, waiting for a bollock, and Mark Stimpson, the manager, unbelievable, just come in, was really calm, didn't rip into anyone, and just said, like, you're the fittest team I've ever known, we've worked so hard for this, all your friends and family out there. I sold a coach load, like 56 to all the local kids around here, to my missus and all her family. So I had loads of people. 130 tickets, I think I needed. So I knew I had a lot of people out there. So before we went out, I got the boys in the huddle. At the time, I was 32, 33, and I had all young kids with me. Like Barry Fuller, who's gone on to have a good career, Adam Miller, Mitchell Cole, Craig Dobson, Steve Guppy was playing for us at the time as well. So I just got him in the huddle and I said, like, listen, do we want to go away and disappoint? We don't want to come here and lose, you know what I mean? Especially if all these people here live on Sky, we ain't started yet, let's get out there. And we went out second half and we was unbelievable. Craig Dobson scored the first, Mitchell Cole scored the first, Dobson got the second, and then Steve Morrison got the winner in the 88th minute. So it was just an amazing experience to play at the new Wembley first and foremost, but to be the first team to win the cup final at the new Wembley was even greater honour.
Absolutely. And Jeff Kenner was playing for the other team, another fantastic fullback.
Yeah, they had some good players as well. Wichita up front, so they had a good team. Really good.
And you mentioned Steve Morrison, had him on the show a couple of times, and another Millwall legend.
Yeah, no, you could tell then he's going to be, I think he scored 32 that season.
Yeah.
And we would have got promoted that year if George Boyd went to Peterborough in March. So we lost him.
Yeah, that's right.
So we had George Boyd and Steve Morrison up front, mate. We was the best team. I think we went like 25 games unbeaten or something, and we would have got promoted to League Two as well, but they sold Boyd in March, and I think we missed him a lot.
Well, Morrison loves scoring goals at Wembley, doesn't he?
Yeah, the legend, mate. Every time he's got Millwall promoted 3 years ago today. What was that? When they beat Bradford 1-0. And I think he's done it a few more times as well, hasn't he?
Absolutely.
He's a great player.
Yeah. I agree. Miserable, top bloke as well.
Miserable, but a great player.
Well, I just said he's a top bloke. Yeah.
he's so moody and miserable, but he'd do anything for you as well. He's a great lad.
I agree. Bobby?
As a senior player, you've obviously by that point been everywhere you can possibly go as a player, really. So a new ground would have probably been quite rare to visit. How did that feel as a senior player? And was it more intimidating knowing you had such a large audience behind you?
Normally when, as soon as you cross that, it's an old saying most players say, as soon as you cross the white line, it's like any other game, which it is, but not even being to the new Wembley, because it literally just opened like a couple of weeks before. So we went the day before, which was a good experience because that took that sort of nerves away. So we did everything. We explored all the change rooms, where we was going to sit, the warm-up room inside, all through the little tunnels and corridors, every inch of the pitch, where the families were going to sit. So when we got there the next day, we weren't looking at all that, so that was out of our mind. I just think the occasion got to a few of the younger players, and the best thing about it was the calming influence of the manager at half time. I think if he had ripped into them, it could have had a negative effect in the second half. Probably could have lost 3 or 4, but he wasn't. He was calm and controlled, and went out second half, and as soon as he got the first goal, that was it. The boys enjoyed it, and I think Stephen has sold like 35,000 tickets that day, so it was great. We had a great turnout. We literally had a whole two bottom tiers and a lot more of the kiddermen to the seats as well, so a real good turnout and a great day.
Well, they do say 2-0 is the most dangerous scoreline, and did you really think you could do it when you did go 2-0, two goals down, especially because that was just before half time?
In some teams, no. With this team, yes, I knew we could get back, because I've never played for a team like it in terms of the team spirit and never say die attitude, and we've done it a lot of times that season, so I knew we could get back. But you also as well, it's dangerous when you go 2-0 up. I watched, because I think the game was 13 years ago, like last week, so I watched back a little YouTube clip someone put on Facebook, and when they scored their second goal, it was like they'd already won. All the subs were jumping on, and the manager run down the touchline, and when you're watching back, you're thinking, you don't know what's going to come next, you know what I mean? So sometimes that could be dangerous.
I think it's far too easy to become complacent with a scoreline like that. And was it difficult kind of consoling the younger players in the dressing room at half-time, or were they quite understanding of what the manager was saying, and did that settle them down prepared for the second half?
Yeah, 100%. It wasn't a case of consoling, it was just a case of getting their heads up and start playing a normal game. So it wasn't playing a normal game. I was a bit reluctant to take people on, trying to do the simple thing rather than be adventurous. And I'm not just saying it, I think Gaffer made a mistake. Steve Guppy was the first ever player to play at the old Wembley and the new Wembley, and he hadn't played for weeks. He hadn't played for ages. He had a bad calf, so I think it was just more of a creating a history thing rather than a good selection.
Right.
So the minute he took him off on 50 minutes, Craig Dobson come on, who was at the time 22 and tricky winger, horrible to play against, and he come on and did literally change the game and actually won man a match when playing 35 minutes. So that was an inspired substitution as well, which changed everything.
Well, definitely a good choice by the manager in the end. Probably better bringing on the other player with 10 minutes to go or something like that. Give him, you know, fresh legs then, and then he can make history.
It's a great decision. Yeah, it's a good decision as well, because Dobbo was 22, 23 and more of an impact player sort of thing. So he didn't always play great if he started. So it's definitely a great decision.
Great stuff.
Do you know, this is going to sound really harsh for me to say, Mark, but I think that footballers who kind of crumble at, you know, at Wembley finals, I feel really bad for them, because that could be the only opportunity they have to play at Wembley. And then when they have a nightmare, yeah, it's not one to remember, is it?
Yeah, and I spoke to friends who have played at Wembley before. Like I've got advice from them. I think it's Millwall played Wigan in what was it, LDV? I don't know what
kind of LDV Vans Trophy. Yeah,
yeah, they lost 1-0. It was probably the most boring final in the world, but Millwall lost. And the boys said, like, you look forward to this day so much. There was 50,000 Millwall fans there. But if you lose at Wembley, it's not a sport memory, but it's not as good as it was obviously if you win. So when you go, they said, you got to win, otherwise it will ruin everything. You know what I mean? Your whole experience, your day out. Because obviously after the game, you're celebrating for another couple of hours longer. By the time we was even off the pitch, Kidderminster were probably on the coach and on the way home. So it makes a whole day of it a lot better if you do win that game.
All right, Mark, well, look, one more thing before I let you go. I'm going to have to put you right on the spot here. And if you want to sit on the fence, that's fine, because numerous guests have got splinters on their asses. That's fine. But if you could name an 11 players that you've played against, the best 11, could you do that?
Yeah, probably.
All right.
Played with or against?
Against.
Yeah, okay. I'd have to say David Seaman and Golden. It's got to be Lee Dixon, right back, isn't it?
Okay.
Left back, who would that be? Nigel Winterburn. He's always tough. David Beckham, right wing.
Okay.
I didn't pick a centre-half, did I? Who's centre-half? Oh, you have put me on the spot here, mate. You asked me earlier. Centre-back, who did I play against who were good?
You played Newcastle United. Who was at the back there? Was it? It wasn't Dabizas, was it? He was another European winner. He didn't play, but he got a medal.
So David Beckham right wing. I'm going to put Ben Thornley left wing. Ben Thornley as a kid before he got injured was just unbelievable. Centre midfield's got to be Nicky Butt, Paul's goals all day long. Up front, who's up front?
Ian Wright.
Yeah, you've got to put Ian Wright up there, and probably Ian Rush was the other one.
Okay.
Unbelievable players. And centre backs, who can I say there? I'm going to go, Kenny Cunningham was brilliant.
Yep.
I played with and against him. He was unbelievable. And I'm going to put my mate in, Ben Thatcher. So I played with him and against him. And he was just an absolute animal. I never want to play against him again.
Excellent.
So I've got to put him.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, Mark, thank you ever so much for joining us, mate. Really, really appreciate it. Hopefully you can come back on again sometime.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Thank you so much for having me. And thanks, Bobby.
Oh, thank you.
Great stuff. There we go. Wonderful. Mark Beards. Bobby, thanks for joining me. Really appreciate it. That was fun.
No problem, thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Before I let you go, plug your stuff.
Yeah. My Twitter handle, so it's Bobby, and then it's HADG, so it's like Bobby Hadg.
Wonderful.
It's not very easy to say.
That's all right, not a problem. I'm sure the listeners will understand that it's fine. You get a few people following you after this. Right.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Those of you still listening, we're on Twitter @ShootTheFence. Give us a follow there. We also have an Instagram. So until next time, take care.